From the Jackalope Studios high above the city in beautiful Zona Rosa, welcome to Minutes to Memories, reconnecting spirit, mind, and body with your host, Dr. Daryl Drumright.
Hey everybody, happy Friday. I hope everybody's in a comfortable spot or on your way to that. Grab a cold one and let's go deep. This is Dr. Drumright with Harmony Health Systems here in Kansas City, and we're making minutes into memories. Got a couple different topics we're going to hit on tonight. We're going to start off like we have the last few weeks with a little bit of reading of the Tao Te Ching, the ancient Chinese book of wisdom. And then we're going to move into trying to, through the radio, help you find specific acupuncture points on your skin so that you can start using some of these light switches or points on your body to help you be your own doctor, which is my ultimate quest. Then further, we're going to talk about a little bit of current events, and then maybe talk about some personal current events that are recently underway in my life. So let's get us started with the Tao Te Ching. Remember, this is an interpretation from my friend and recently deceased Dr. Ralph Allendale, with honor and respect to him and his works. Verse number 5, yin and yang. You've heard of those. Everybody uses those symbols. They have tattoos on their body of the yin-yang symbol. But I inquire to people that have these markings and these jewelry of what they really understand of what that means. And it's, they get the yes or no, the up, down, the male, female, the opposites attract. And I guess that is the ultimate understanding of the yin and yang. But as we'll see, it goes a little deeper than that. Yin and yang aren't sentimental. They exist without moralizing. They act regardless of our wishes, within the ebb and flow of every pregnant moment. The space between yin and yang is like a bellows, empty yet infinitely full. The more it yields, the more it fills. Countless words count less than the silent balance between yin and yang. That's just beautiful. Commentary by Dr. Dale. Yin and yang, like heaven and earth, is a metaphor for all that exists. We are reminded here that existence is not sentimental. The course of events does not simply follow our wishes or prayers. Moreover, the harder we try to force events to conform to our moralizations, the less likely our success. On the other hand, the more we yield to the rhythms, bellows, of life, the greater our fruition. How often Lao Tzu bids us to put aside our ideological predilections so that we may be free to ebb and flow with the new opportunities of every pregnant moment. Thus, countless words, our exhortations, count less than the silent, existential balance between yin and yang. As human beings, we have a tendency to try to define ourselves by moments and what we guide towards permanency. We have this underlying drive to try to make permanent that which is not. The yin and yang teaches us that within the maximum yang, there is the seed of yin. Within the maximum yin, there is the seed of yang. Everything flows to its peak and then recedes like the tides come and go. Humans, through statues, through accumulation of physical wealth, through identities and titles and names and letters on the back of your name and all these things that we go through to try to depict ourselves as somewhat permanent, is fruitless. You are fighting against the overall background of the universal change. It is a much happier and, as the book teaches us, more fruitful position to actually go with the flow and seize opportunity as they come, but don't possess them with their entirety, because soon a new opportunity will come if you allow it. Once you attach to something and become to identify yourself with that something, you are automatically restricting yourself from access to new somethings that are coming along, but you won't see them because you have bound your spirit to something that you've already identified or attached to. Verse 6. We're going to cover three verses today because these are pretty short ones. Verse 6. Life's spirit. The spirit of life never dies. It is the infinite gateway to mysteries within mysteries. It is the seed of yin, the spark of yang. Always elusive, endlessly available. Always the paradox. Commentary. The spirit of life is infinite, mysterious, inexhaustible, and both passive yin and active yang. It is non-dualistic. It is the non-dualistic aspect of spirit that separates the great integrity from all religious precepts of spirit. There is a corollary separation of the great integrity from modern science, which also harbors dualistic premises. However, 21st century meta-scientific spirituality is already seated in molecular physics and in a isomenical consciousness. That's a religious term, and I'm not really familiar with it. It's something about writing things down or putting things in order, as far as I understand it. Our 21st century opportunities are strewn with the materialization of the spiritual and the spiritualization of the material as we dichotomize all the cobwebs of our dualistic mythology, allowing us to experience life as a spontaneity and free of ideological filters. Let's read that again. Our 21st century opportunities are strewn with materialization of the spiritual and the spiritualization of the material as we dichotomize all the cobwebs of our dualistic mythologies, allowing us to experience life as spontaneity and free of ideological filters. I think what he's saying here, and this is just my personal interpretation, is that we have come full circle, that our microscopes and our telescopes and our computers and the advanced scanning abilities that we have to see how things are pulled apart and what they're made of is bringing us full circle back to the understanding that life is a paradox. It both exists and doesn't exist. It is full yet empty. It comes and goes. Yeah, I was reading something the other day that was talking about there's only two emotions, love and fear. Everything else is a branch of those two emotions. Love is a fearless situation of creativity and interaction with the background integrity. Fear is a cloak, a dark cloak that covers your love and prevents you from expressing your humanity, because fear is reactivity. It's a efforts to control that which you are afraid of. If you have any kind of energy at all and you're operating from a fear modality, all of your efforts are going to be to dominate or control your environment and all other human beings that you come in contact with, because unconsciously they are a threat to your survival because you are constantly afraid. Everything is a threat to your survival. So it gets into a vicious loop of downward spiral. The more you fear, the more you act to suppress. The more you act to suppress, the more dangerous your environment becomes, which grants you more things to be afraid of, and on you go into this insane world of darkness. The other hand, simply peel back the covers of fear by the tool of knowledge. If something stimulates the emotion of fear inside you, you investigate it. And soon you will find the data that you were missing that was causing that tickle of fear. So do not run from the things that make you afraid. Investigate the things that make you afraid. And I think that goes very hand in hand with a lot of the themes of this radio station, Todd. You guys have the courage to investigate the unknown and the mysterious. These mysterious unknown things evoke a subtle fear in our spirit or in our souls. And with that, some people would choose to just ignore it or hide from it or tuck it away or boohoo it or chastise it or somehow demonize it because it's too scary for them to actually confront. But with the use of the internal love and the courage to investigate, you uncover the secrets, the data, the missing data, and with that knowledge, the fear recedes and you once again realize that we're all part of the same universe. And, you know, there was an interesting thing I was listening to about everything that you look out in the world around you is simply another aspect of you. That if there's something that you hate, that's you. How can you possibly hate you? If you have these negative energies, these negative emotions, and you're projecting them onto people and things around you, you have to gather the courage to look at it closer, because the part of that that disgusts you or that you have a problem with is actually reminding you of yourself, the parts of yourself that you don't like, the subconscious identities that you hold and maybe do not display, but yet deep inside, you're still holding on to these identities. And when you see them displayed in another person, it makes you recoil and act in fear or in anger or have these opposite of love emotions. Verse 7, modesty. The great integrity, having no birth, expresses his immortality without pronouncements. The wise are heard through their silence, always self-full through selflessness. This is a good one. Commentary by Dr. Dale. The ego is the issue here. It is the very act of calling attention to ourselves that alienates us from others. Moreover, it is this very alienation that prevents self and social fulfillment. When we no longer have to respond to the compulsive, alternating, bulimic demands and anorexic sufferings of our battered egos, then we will fulfill ourselves naturally and silently, just as the great integrity expresses its immortality without pronouncements. Wow. Now, this is one that I probably need to rehearse more and more, because if anything that I have a personality quirk is I'm loud. I'm gung-ho. I'm boisterous. I jump into the fray, and I'm not afraid to say what I'm feeling, because I know that if things change in the future, I can change my mind. But some people that I discuss with, they think that I'm saying something that means that that's the way I'm always going to believe or I'm always going to be, because they still are living in this world of permanency, that everything is somehow solid and stuck. And I don't live in that world. So when I pronounce and walk through the world, I'm like flowing and moving and making observations and saying things that may be disturbing at the moment, but I'm saying them just to bring up conversation, just to roll it around with my fellow human beings to see what kind of light comes from it or where it's coming from. Is it coming from fear or is it coming from love? I don't feel like you can actually get anywhere without cracking some eggs and opening it up and rolling it around to see how it fits and puts together. Now, the Lao Tzu talks that once you, that just tells me that I haven't achieved that point of great wisdom yet, where I just sit back and watch and let you figure it out for yourself. And I just so much want to jump out there and help you, you know. It's like, oh, no, here, go this way. Here, why don't you try this? Here. So I still have a lot to learn. And this particular verse tells me very clearly that although I am on the path, I feel like I'm strong and headed in the right direction, I still have a great deal ahead of me in my journey called life. And that's a good thing, because at 47 years old, I'm still a young man. Okay. So enough of those verses. We're going to save some for later. There's 81 of them, and we got the rest of our lives together to talk this out. So what we're going to do is we're going to move on to some acupuncture points and try to find a few of what we call the master points or the major points. And the one I want to talk to first is designated in numerology as stomach 36. Stomach 36. Now, the number designations were actually applied by a French explorer. And so when you go into the Chinese culture and the Korean culture and the Japanese, each one of these cultures had different names for these very powerful points. But they were put together by explorer and doctor called Soleil de Meuron. And he was a French scientist who studied all the different cultures and put together this pattern of numerating all of the acupuncture points. So stomach 36 is on the yang meridian stomach. It's on the outside of your lower leg. The best way to find this point is to take the web of your hand between the thumb and the forefinger and set it over the top of your kneecap with your knee bent at 90 degrees. So you're sitting in your chair, your knee bent at 90 degrees, hook the web of between your thumb and the forefinger over the kneecap, and then lay the fingers down along the outside of your leg. right where your, we call it the chiropractic index finger, your third finger, your longest finger, where it touches, you'll feel a little groove in between two bones. The bones are the fibula and the tibia, the bones of your lower leg, and inside that groove, you'll feel a little soft spot. That is the point called stomach 36. This is a master point for everything in the body, the cell population called the body, from the neck down. This is useful for athletics. It's useful for musculoskeletal, gastrointestinal, just about anything and everything that has to do with an imbalance in the body from the neck down. This is one of the primary points that you can use. Now, the way to stimulate these points at home is simple. You scratch them, you pinch them, you burn them, you ice them, you poke on them, you twist them, you just stimulate them. However you want to do it. So that is stomach 36. And the next one we want to go to is the other major master point. It's called large intestine 4. Large intestine 4 is also called hagu, and this is in the web between your thumb and your forefinger. Now, many of you probably know about this point. This is one of the ones that actually is making its way into Western culture and mythology. This point, if you take your thumb and your forefinger and lay them alongside each other, you'll see a little bump or a hillock that develops in between these two fingers. Right at the peak of that little hillock right there is the acupuncture point called large intestine 4. Large intestine 4 is a master point for everything from the neck up. So in two points, you can treat everything in the body. Stomach 36 on the outside portion of the lower leg for the neck down, and large intestine 4 for everything from the head neck up. Now, this includes sinuses, eye problems, headache, ear problems, toothache. I had a root canal with nothing but acupuncture for the anesthesia. Very interesting experience. It wasn't painful. You could feel the vibration of the drill, but there was no actual pain during the process. I had an audience. It was an interesting event. Okay, so this is Dr. Drumright with Minutes to Memories. HarmonyHealth.com is my primary website. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back again with a few more acupuncture points.
Is this the Jackalope 105 FM.
Hey, this is Dr. Drumrate again. 816-436-9355. That's not a call-in number, by the way. That's a number to my clinic so that you can actually get an appointment and meet me and talk to me live. So we were talking about acupuncture points. There's two more that I'm going to cover tonight. We're going to go through to 3 yin meeting or spleen 6. Spleen 6 is on the inside of your lower leg, okay? And the best way to find that is that big bump on the inside of your ankle, you know, the big bone there. You lay your fingers right up alongside on the top side of that and just lay all four fingers on there and then kind of measure up into the inside of the leg. And you'll find a bony ridge on the inside there. That's the tibia. And you kind of run your fingers up the back side, or what we call posterior, but the back side of that bony ridge, about 4 inches up from that bony prominence of the inside ankle, you'll find a spot that goes, ashie, ow. Oh, it's very tender when you find that. All right. Now, this is female point. It's 3 yin meeting point. For men, it's useful as it balances the yin energy, and we just talked about yin and yang. But for females, this is a very powerful point for menstrual cramps, for PMS, emotional problems, anything having to do with the female reproductive system or just the existence of the female cycle. Now, important part about this point is do not stimulate this point if you're pregnant, except in the last week or two of pregnancy, because the historical reports or classical reports say that this is one of the points that you can use to induce labor. Acupuncture has very good success. That would not be good. No, yeah. So please don't do that. I'm teaching you the point because it's useful during all other parts of your life, but understand that some of these things are not to be used on a pregnant woman. That is one of the only and one of the most important places and that you don't want to be amateuring around with acupuncture points, because these are places on the surface of the skin that have bioelectric circuitry influence. Okay, think of the surface of your skin as a microchip. Okay, you have electricity flowing across the surface of the microchip, but there's not actually grooves carved into that microchip. These are electrical circuits that are designed through the electrons as it passes across. Your skin's the same way. You have about 1.5 volts of electricity that's flowing in through the living body. It doesn't exist in the dead body. Maybe the zombies don't have acupuncture points, probably. But on the living body, you have this voltage of electricity pulsing through it. And the acupuncture points are like little on and off switches. They're little dip switches that you can turn the juice one direction or another direction, or turn it up or turn it down and redirect it around. Spleen 6 is magical in that it is a place where all 3 foot yin meridians intersect. So it affects the spleen, it affects the kidneys, and it affects the liver. Those are your 3 yin systems that go through the leg. One point affects all 3, which will balance and tone the female reproductive system and everything female. Spleen 6. The other one we want to talk about is a master point. It's on the best way to find it is you take we'll find it on your right arm. And this is kind of hard with radio, okay? You know, if I had videos and slides, I could just stick it up there and you could find it, but I'm trying to walk you through that. Yeah, Todd says we're going to get there. We're going to have that kind of stuff soon. You lay put your hand on the table, your right hand on the table with the thumb sticking in the air, all right? Now, take your other hand and put the net between the thumb and forefingers, groove it into the net of 4 fingers of your right hand as it's sticking up in the air. Now, your left index finger should be pointing down the wrist of the right arm. Now, when it's down the wrist, you want to roll off towards the inside about 1/2 inch. So you roll to the inside of the bony ridge you feel there, which is your ulna, or your radius and ulna. Yeah, I get them right. The ulna. So you roll to the inside of the ulna there, and you'll find a point on the surface of the skin. This is called lung 7. Now, this is a very powerful point for just about anything. I mean, this is really effective for neck pain and spinal problems. It affects musculoskeletal problems throughout the body. This is one of my instructor, Master Yinny's favorite points on the body. There's certain series of points, 6 or 8 points that you can actually treat just using those points. There's 362 plus points on the body that are mapped out, but there's about a dozen of them that are used consistently and daily. Most of the other points are simply what we call circle the dragon points. If you have a symptom in an area of the body, then you will use the points around that area that are along the meridians. So instead of just stimulating anywhere in the body, if you know the points, you will stimulate above and below the damage to open the channel and let the chi flow through the area, which stimulates tissue regeneration and recovery from the trauma that threw the cells out of balance. But there are the points like we talked about so far, stomach 36, large intestine 4, spleen 6, and now lung 7. These are very powerful master points that affect the entire system and the whole matrix of cells that make up the human body. So we've covered three verses and four acupuncture points. Let's move up to something more present and more current. Tuesday in Missouri, we had everybody went out and voted. And my favorite topic that I've talked about on a couple of radio shows is the Missouri Proposition C. Todd went out and voted. I went out and voted. Did you vote for Proposition C?
No.
Absolutely. Proposition C won by 72%. 70%. I went through the numbers, and Missouri's got a nice website where you can actually watch the real numbers come in precinct to precinct. And some of the interesting stats I got out of it was there were 40,000 people in Missouri that voted on the Proposition C measure that didn't vote on the Senate or anything else in the whole ballot. They just went in to just vote on that one issue. 40,000 people. Another thing I noticed was, I don't advocate party politics. I mean, I've been Democrat, I've been Republican, I've been on both sides, and they're both the same. They both stink. I mean, that's just, party politics is not for you and me, it's for the people with the money. But anyway, within the two-party system, the Republicans showed up in almost a 2-to-1 margin over the Democrats. So the number of votes that cast, so that tells me that Proposition C pulled the conservatives to the polls. So they showed up, and the Democrats, which basically, as I've seen it, seem to just do what they're told. They have their bosses and their leaders that just tell them, they give them pre-designed ballot, and then take them out there, and they just vote the way they're told to vote, because that's how they get their handouts. Because I don't know how anybody can think that spending somebody else's money is a good thing. But anyway, like I said, I'm not going to sink into that. But the R's outnumbered the D's almost 2-to-1. So that tells us that the ballot didn't have anything important for the Democrats to worry about, so they didn't show up at the ballot box, which gave Proposition C the overwhelming support that it had. Had they had some kind of contested race in the Democrats or something that would have got them out to the polls, it probably wouldn't have been that great. But I did notice that the number of total number of Republican, constitutional, and libertarian votes together was still some about 20,000 votes short of the number of yes votes that were on the Proposition C. So that tells me that there is a percentage of the Democrats as well that came out and understood what Proposition C means. Now, I'm going to detail into that a little bit because you've heard, I'm sure other people, well, the interesting thing is the Missouri Hospital Association spent somewhere like $200,000 getting out the vote to try to oppose Proposition C. Now, Proposition C is the Missouri Healthcare Freedom Act, if you don't remember. What it says clearly is in three steps is, in Missouri, you cannot be penalized for not buying health insurance. In Missouri, you can pay your doctor directly and not be penalized. In Missouri, a doctor can accept payment directly from you and not be penalized. Now, why is this important? Well, this is important to me, and for my most important reason is privacy. You see, with the Patient Protection Act, Obamacare, one of the things it does is it spreads your medical information to all government agencies. They have these HIPAA guidelines that me as a doctor, I cannot talk about you to anybody else. I have to very carefully guard and secure your patient privacy. But the government doesn't. I mean, your information, as long as you're using their system, is easily spread around up and down through the channels so that anybody can look at it, so that they can call you. I talked to a patient about this that said, what's coming? This was before the election, that we know, and I think I talked about it 2 weeks ago, that your basic metabolic index is how fat you are, is now, as part of the policy, will be on your tax records. Now, why in the world does the IRS need to know how fat you are? Well, because with the new healthcare plan, the IRS is going to be assigning your insurance premiums. So when it assigns your insurance premiums, it needs to know how fat you are so that it can assign a proper premium for what your lifestyle index. So I was talking to this patient about this, saying, you know, wait till you get a phone call from a very nice person who's calling from the government, who says, we noticed on your medical records that your BMI is 32, and we would like to help you get it back down to where it belongs at 20 or so. We have a course available to you in the coming up weekends, and we would like to enroll you in that course. Would you like the morning or the afternoon course? Of course, how do they know you? How do they know your phone number? How do they know that you need that course? And by the way, how are they going to enforce you coming to that course? Well, that's easy. You get a credit for going to the course, and you turn the credit into the IRS saying, look, I'm trying, and they can lower your health premiums, maybe. So I brought this up as a scenario to a patient, and this patient happens to work for the government, and she goes, oh, well, that's already happening. You see, where I work, we've already gone through those courses. We've already got our premium deductions for going through these lifestyle courses, the stop smoking courses and these kind of things. Now, you know, as a chiropractor and a natural healthcare provider, I think it's important that you learn how to take care of yourself. So I'm a total advocate for everybody stepping to the plate and going back to school to learn what food is and what food's not, to learn that you exercise every day. But this rubs me completely wrong when your government's going to take the responsibility of telling you to do that from you. You need to stand up and do that yourself for your own good reason. And saving money on your taxes, this rubs me the wrong way. You know, if you're not self-motivated or self-determined, you know, I can coach you and I can talk to you and I can sales pitch you, but I can't tell you to get up and go exercise. Because if I can tell you to get up and go exercise, then I can tell you anything I want to tell you. And I can tell you to go bend over and you know, kiss your toe if I want to tell you that. And because I have precedent authority to tell you what to buy and not to buy, guess what? The courts are going to say that I have precedent authority to tell everybody to suck their big toe at noon every day. You know, that's the slippery slope we're going down with this. And I am so proud to live in the state of Missouri, where the voters went to the poll in numbers and a 72% margin said, not in Missouri, baby. No way. Here's our line in the sand. We're telling you that we can participate in your system if we want, but if we don't want to, you can't make us. Okay? And then I wrote an article already on this, is that chiropractic is an entire healthcare system. It includes, you know, learning how to eat right. I mean, we're portal of entry doctors. We would need a little of assistance and probably some EMTs, you know, for emergency medicine. But I've got an entire program that I wrote up. It's about 8 steps of how to create a healthcare system that's a voluntary program that each person puts a little bit of money into an emergency pool that's not used on a daily doctor visits. And then you go to the local hospital and you say, look, we've got 500 people that we want to use your hospital. We'll pay cash. We promise we won't be here in there every day. We're only going to come in, you know, when we really need it. What do you think the hospital is going to say? Absolutely. That's free market. That's what we need to fix our healthcare system. We need to get back into people being responsible for themselves, communicating with their neighbors, stop letting some independent, faraway government agency decide what's good for you. All right, Dr. Drumright, end of second segment. Go get another cold one. Just kick back and relax. We'll be back in a few minutes, and I'll talk about my personal adventure next.
Thinking nothing could go wrong. Well, now I know.
Jackalope 105 FM.
Hey, we're back. Happy Friday. All right, so this last little section of the radio show, I'm going to kind of shoot from the hip here because something very special happened to me this week, and it came out of the blue. I go through well over 100 emails every day from a lot of different topics and a lot of different people. And every once in a while, I mean, I'll go through if I'm in a hurry and I'll just delete off anything I don't know who it's coming from or the topic. But this one email came from an old person that I hadn't heard from in years, and it just kind of popped up. So I went ahead and opened it and read it, and this lady was telling me about a recent experience she had. And so I followed up on this because it was right along the same lines as what my meditation has directed me and some of the things that I've been coming up with in my dreams. And what it led me to was a website called the Nemenha Band, and I'm not sure I even pronounced that right. It's Nemenhah. It is the Nemenha Band of Native American Traditional Organization. It is a organization of Native American medicine men and women. So I looked into it further, and it's an organization with United Nations backing, American constitutional backing. It is a traditional Native American religious organization that really dials in on the perpetuation of the concept of self-determinism. I'm kind of talking off the cuff because I've only recently learned about this and got involved with it. I sent my credentials in as a Qigong instructor and an acupuncturist and a chiropractor, and I talked to the man in charge. His name is Chief Cloudpiler, and I was invited and recently adopted by this Nemenha Band of Medicine Men, and I have been credentialed as a medicine man, traditional spiritual leader. Now, this is a little overwhelming for me because as I'm talking to these people and discussing their philosophies and their legal constructs and the way that they do things, it is so exactly along the lines and in tune with what I was doing already. Now, I'm going to try to get Chief Cloudpiler on the radio in the next week or two to talk about, you know, what's happened. From my conversations with him, this organization has been around for about 10 years, and it's based on a 2007 United Nations. Let me see if I can find it here just a second. U.S. Supreme Court decision, Gonzalez of Ocentra, Utah Supreme Court decision. The Constitution of the United States of America, the Nemenha Band Constitutions, UN Resolution on Universal Human Rights, the UN Declaration of Indigenous People, the Body of Indian Law, and Treaty Law. Now, this UN Declaration of Indigenous People is in 2007. This was ratified by the United Nations. And if you remember anything about that, there was indigenous people in New Zealand and Australia that were suing in the international courts for oppression by the Australian government and the Western-run governments in the area. And as far as I understand it, the United Nations court came down to say that just because you've been conquered and there's another cultural influence that dominates or owns the land from which you have heritage from, the United Nations makes the stance that you still have the right to practice your religious beliefs as you are taught and as you understand them to be. Well, this judgment on an international stage prepared the way for the Native Americans to revitalize their culture, their religion, their understanding of the Great Spirit, their understanding of where man is and where man resides as a whole. Now, as I'm exploring and studying and I'm working for what's called the shirt position, so it's the first step up from an initiate, which is what I am now, one of the things I'm discovering is in the Tao, which we read at the beginning of the article, the basic of the Taoist religion is God created the heavens, Then he transformed and created the earth. Then he transformed and created man. So there's three steps to creation: heaven, earth, and man. And the traditional American Indian, what they call the medicine wheel, at the center of the medicine wheel are three stones. One represents the Godfather. The second one represents the Mother Earth. And the third one represents the soul, you. So man in the center of the wheel with his Godfather and his Mother Earth. And then around the outside of the wheel are his connections and influences over his life. Very sacred, very good knowledge. And in discussing with some of my other Native American friends, there's some resistance to this because within the Native American culture, there's a tradition of secrecy, that the elders and this knowledge is to be sacred and held close to the vest. But discussing with them, I believe, and I have not actually spoken with the council beyond Chief Cloudpiler, but I'm suspecting that what's going on here is very similar to what happened in China back in the late 1990s. The Qigong masters and the acupuncture masters and the Taoists and the Buddhists all got together in a grand conclave, and they decided that their ancient knowledge, their kung fus, if you will, their understandings of life and universe, were too important to let slip into antiquity, that the secretive and the family connections and the way that they'd passed it on traditionally was no longer adequate for what the needs of humanity as a whole. So in order to express the love and help humanity evolve and become who they're really supposed to be, the Qigong Chinese masters decided to let it all hang out, to teach who would ever want to learn, to westernize or bring the knowledge into the Western language, into any language that would transpose it or change it into. So you see, in the last 10 years, the word Qigong and these kind of philosophies coming into our common expressions, where if you're old enough and you remember back in the 70s when we first got exposed to Japan and the Japanese and the karate and the Bruce Lee and these kind of things, they were fun and useful, but very hollow in their expression. You found martial arts, you found the destructive and the warlike part of it, because the Westerners like that stuff, was taught to us, but we weren't taught the underlying philosophy. We weren't taught the underlying spirituality of what all those martial arts are. But then in the late 90s, this was begun to be exposed to us. Now, in studying the Nimenha and the traditional American folklore here, an interesting thing I found in one of the websites is, through the ancestors and through the spirit paths, what they're discovering is that there's a cultural connection from Tibet throughout the Americas, and that they're suggesting that in prehistory there was an entire civilization that occupied North America, Central America, South America, the entire Pacific Rim, Australia, Japan, and the Southern Asian continent up into the Tibetan plateaus. So we had one culture that embraced India, China, Japan, Australia, North America, Aztec, Central America, South America, Peruvian. All these people are of common descent from a one grand culture of understanding and self-determinism. And I say that word self-determinism because it is the centerpiece of the entire religion, that each man stands at the center of his own medicine wheel. He stands there with his Father God and his Mother Earth. He stands separate and distinct, yet one with all. It fits just so smoothly hand in hand back in with the yin and yang and the Taoism that I've been trained at. And so talking to Chief Cloudpiler, the emphasis of this new band of medicine men is not to force everybody to learn one way, as the American Indian way, but actually to allow you to have your own medicine bag, your own tools and techniques. For me, it's chiropractic, acupuncture, trigger point therapies, Qigong meditation, and now I'm going to learn a few new from the American Indian tradition. And just like a mechanic with a tool bag, each medicine man will have his own personality of tool bags that he can draw from. And this is all appropriate. It's all absolutely fine. The only thing that they ask is that you understand the sacredness of what you're doing. That when you're engaging another human being, it's not a flesh bag. It's not a puppet. It's not a toy. That you're engaging a sacred spiritual entity. That you're helping another human being understand the balance, understand where they stand in life, where they are spiritually. And see how this runs right back around to the name of this radio show. Mind, body, spirit, reconnecting the three. And so my exploration continues. I love having the radio show to share with you as I'm learning new things. I'm sharing with you things that I've learned over the last 25 years. But as you can see, there's lots I don't know. But as I learn them, I promise to share them with you because we are approaching the age of enlightenment. We are approaching a very important crux in the evolution of humanity. And the only way we can really get through this with love as the dominance and not fear is through education and communication and courageous expression of love to one another and humanity as a whole. So I love you. Have a great Friday. Have an awesome weekend. I look forward to talking to you again next week. This is Dr. Drumright, Minutes to Memories. God bless.